The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Welcome. We have reached the middle of the week. It is the sixth week of the college football season. Remember, just yesterday we were counting down, and now we're getting ready for another big weekend and a lot to do today. Some fantastic guests. Don't forget, Friday we'll be on the road again, this time in the Bluegrass State. Your phone calls in a moment. Let's get to some headlines, and there's some big ones right now, especially connected to that game that we will be at. Derek Stingley Jr., it's been in the news all year. He's been struggling, and now he's struggling even more. He's out indefinitely after getting a procedure on an injured foot. Nobody knows when he is coming back, but he won't be back this weekend. And how about Kentucky as a ranked team versus LSU? Remember 2007? Les Miles does. His team lost. They lost another overtime game that year. They still won the national championship somehow. They were undefeated in regulation. Anyway, so what does all this mean for LSU? We'll talk in a few minutes with Ross Dellinger. He covers college football for Sports Illustrated, but it wasn't long ago that he was the beat reporter on the LSU beat. He understands the lay of the land down there better than anyone, and we'll get his take on what the future looks like for Coach O. Drew Sanders, likely to miss A&M. He's a outside linebacker. He is quite good, and they would normally miss him very much against an explosive offense. Razorbacks will tell us more about Ole Miss ceiling than Alabama did. This is a big game. Winner this game, still alive. Loser has to leave town. Well, that's only if it's Arkansas. Let's look at the defense versus the offensive numbers here. This is a game of offense versus defense because we know how great the offense is at Ole Miss. We know how great the defense is at Arkansas. The Gators, they are flagged as pretenders in Lexington. We'll talk to the man who wrote that. Covers the Gators, and that is a conversation that I am looking forward to very much. Okay, I mentioned Ross will be with us shortly, then G. Allen Taylor. Don't know what the G stands for, but it's pretty cool. Just call me J. Paul Feinbaum in the future. John Talty later on all the rumors and the Auburn situation. Alyssa Andrea will join us end of the third hour. And Michael Eaves, the great Sports Center anchor, we usually have Michael on to make fun of him because he's a Kentucky guy. We won't be making fun today, I can tell you that. Your phone call is at 855-242-7285. And I wrote this week down on the calendar. I thought the game of the year in the SEC would be in College Station, and I assumed that because SEC Nation tries to go to an event every weekend that I would finally get to meet my good friend Matt from San Antonio. I was going to go out with Matt and his many girlfriends on Friday night and try to counsel him. But Matt, doesn't look like we're going to make it out there this weekend. How are you doing?
No, it looks like you're not, Paul. And by the way, before I talk about the game with Mississippi State and Alabama at 6 a.m., I'm done with Dana, Paul. Much rest on health now on. I'm taking your advice.
And doing what?
When I get back to San Antonio, eventually, I'm going to, once I take everything in my life, I'm going to try this thing called Just Lunch. It's not a dating app. I swear to God, it's not.
Paul. Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good idea, Matt. I did, I guess you can tell, I did not like the trajectory of your dating habits.
No, I get it. And I'm not happy we lost against Mississippi State. We didn't show up in that game. We played terrible, not too terrible. But we could have won it. I think we might have a slight chance to beat Alabama, but not really. Our analyst, and he's like, "No, you're not gonna beat them." But I still have hope that we can beat them, and if we can keep it like a 2-score game, maybe we can win the game. I don't want your thoughts on it, Paul.
Yeah, Matt, I don't it's hard for me to believe in A&M right now. And part of the reason is not only Haynes King being out, but they had some major losses yesterday came out for the year on the offensive line. And I think that's really the problem. I just don't think this team is gelling at the moment. I don't mean to say they won't. They can't have a resurgence at the end of the year when Haynes King comes back. But right now, they're really in trouble. Hey, thank you for the call. Let's check in with Justin in Mississippi. Hello, Justin.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I want to call and get my opinion. You know, I'm a Florida fan, and, you know, I'll give my opinion on Dan Mullen. You know, I really been high on Dan Mullen for a long time because of his ability to coach offense and, you know, score a lot of points. And because as Florida fans, we had a lot of down years back when Will Muschamp and Jim McElwain were the coaches.
Yeah.
You know, we had a hard time scoring points back then. You know, back when Muschamp was the head coach, you could have given Florida the ball on the opponent.
So, Justin, how do you feel right now about Dan Mullen?
I just feel like that we're never going to win a championship with him as a head coach. It's done become clear to me after the LSU game last year, then after this Kentucky game. And I mean, I'm not trying to take away anything from Kentucky. I think Mark Stoops doing a good job up there turning that program around. But it's just unacceptable to lose to Kentucky. And we're never going to win a championship with Mullen as a head coach. We're going to be an 8-4, 9-3 team at best. He's not a good recruiter. You know, the state of Florida is loaded with the top high school recruits. And Florida's got them in their own backyard, and we're lucky if we can get one 5-star recruit. And we need to make a coaching change, the way I feel. We're never going to win a championship.
Justin, I don't want to act like I'm not here, but I want to make sure I heard you correctly. You just suggested, as a Florida fan, that the school needs to make a coaching change with Dan Mullen?
Yeah, that's right, because we're never going to win a championship with him, you know, as a head coach. We're going to have these slip-up games every year where we're going to lose to a team we're not supposed to lose to. And we just need to get a better coach in there, in my opinion.
Dan Mullen has won 10 games several times. He's been to New Year's Six Bowls every year, I believe. And you're suggesting a coaching change. Okay, well, listen, that's what shows like this are for fans to express their opinion. Larry is up next in Richmond. Hello, Larry.
Hey, Paul. Larry, currently at Richmond, formerly Demopolis, Alabama.
Wonderful.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to comment on, toward the end of the show yesterday, you were asking about which SEC coach had a similar resume to Mark Ricks at Georgia.
Right.
As I recall. I think,
yeah, and
I
was suggesting
right.
It wasn't Kirby Smart. I just, because that conversation's already been done, yeah.
Now, I think that coach resides in College Station, Texas. And I'm talking, you know, I'm talking about Jimbo Fisher.
Right.
If you look at Jimbo, look at his record at Florida State. Yeah, and by the way, I'm an Auburn fan. But by the way, yeah, I know he won a national championship. He did it with a quarterback that probably shouldn't have been in the game. But that's neither here nor there. But when he left Florida State, his last year was terrible. He left it in the shambles, which that program still hasn't rebounded from when he left.
No.
And you look at what he's making now, and you look at his record now, and the guy is a Mark Richt.
Well. You know, I threw that out there because I had a couple of people in mind, and I was particularly interested in what the audience had to say. I said there's a coach in the SEC that reminds me a little bit of Mark Richt. And by the way, that is not an insult, because Mark Richt won 10 games a year most of the time at Georgia, and he won a couple of championships. It was just a coach that just never quite could get over the hump and contend at the highest level. We're up against a break. We have a lot of guests dropping by here. We mentioned the Stingley news. Some think maybe he'll be back. Others don't think there's any chance he's coming back. We mentioned other situations as well. And we will continue with your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we are back. Great to have all of you here as we continue with more phone calls. Hugh is in Deep Gap, North Carolina. Hello, Hugh.
Hello, Paul. Thank you for taking my call. For me, it is my opinion that the most intelligent assessment of anybody that I have heard this year about SEC football is from Greg McAnally. He made a very cogent comment about the fact that the SEC's dalliance with Big 12 football was over. It's back to whoever wins the line of scrimmage. That's been the DNA of the Southeastern Conference for many, many years, and I think he's exactly right. And to that end, another very, very cogent assessment was made by Kirby Smart, the Georgia coach. He said that he has never seen as big a difference as there is this year in fifth-year seniors playing in the trenches, particularly the offensive line. I don't care how many stars a 19-year-old has, he doesn't have much chance against a 22- or 23-year-old NFL-bound lineman. And really, when you stop and think about it, that has more to do about the upside-down nature of where the Southeastern Conference has been this year than anything else. To that end, let me say this to you. LSU, year in and year out, has as much talent as any team in the Southeastern Conference. Some years they put it together, some years they don't. But when that tiger gets mad and gets full of all the negative and they close ranks, they pull the kind of stunt they did against Florida last year. And hopefully to God, they won't be ready to do that against Kentucky. Because I believe it is imperative for Kentucky to validate that win over Florida last week, and I think it'll be the toughest game they have all year long. I believe Saturday night is going to be a slugfest.
Thank you. I agree with you on that. Thank you so much. Good to hear from you. How about Tony in Florida? Hello, Tony.
Good afternoon, Paul. You're doing good today.
Thank you.
I just remember during the golf years, I remember Gators actually handing me business cards that said Gators for Golf. And it used to, it was aggravating, but it was funny. It was clever.
It was.
But now I'm going to print me up some that says Dogs for Mullen. I think I'm going to have to hand those out here pretty soon. And I wanted to tell you, Mark Schlabaugh, he usually eats in Madison, Georgia, at a place called Town 220. If you ever up in Athens or in that area and you want to go to a great restaurant, that's one. I'll pay for your dinner. Come down there one Friday night.
That's mighty nice of you.
I'd love to have you.
I may be there pretty soon, so I will. What's the name of the place again?
It's called Town 220 in Madison, and we're always there Friday night, and the guy who owns the place is absolutely wonderful. It's one of the best restaurants, and I live in Fernandina, so there's great restaurants here, but his is as good as any I go to.
Well, thank you. I would enjoy that very much, and I'll let you know when I'm going to be around. Thank you for the call. Pat is in Georgia. Hello, Pat.
Hey, Paul. Thank you very much. Listen, I know Mark Richt, and Jimbo Fisher is no Mark Richt. but that's not why I called. We listened to SEC Story this morning on the voices, the legendary voices of football. And it didn't matter whether they were talking about, you know, Larry Munson or Eli Gold, or I think the gentleman's name from Tennessee, was his last name Ward?
John Ward.
But anyway, yeah, John. But it didn't matter. If you lived and you had those voices in your ear watching this program, your eyes would well up to overflowing. It didn't matter who they were talking about. But I got to thinking about the fact I've had Larry Munson in my ear from 1966 to 2008, and it didn't matter whether I was at the game or at home. Wherever I was, he was in my ear, and the first 25 years of my Georgia experience, I had Vince Dooley. So my pessimism and long-term thinking about Georgia is well-founded. I mean, listen to some of Larry's calls about how he begs the team to do something.
Well, that's true. But he's also been gone a while. So, hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very, very much. John is up next in Alabama. Hello, John.
Hey, I'm still in Kentucky.
Okay, well, John, I look down and I think about Alabama 24/7, so I got confused.
I know. Yeah, you did with yesterday. You kept calling Iman Jim. I thought that was kind of cute. By the way, I don't like folks that disparage and denigrate, but the Jim and Iman show was precious yesterday morning or afternoon. I love to listen to the opening monologue by you, and they came on like gangbusters.
Yeah, well, I think both felt the same need to try to salvage the first hour, and they both were right.
Yeah, we know why Jim's not part of the Mercury 7 now anyways. Hey, I wanted to talk to you about Bill Hancock. I'm going to come up and see you in Lexington. What's the best time to see you on Friday, to say hi?
Yeah, I would say either right before the show or really any time during the show it's pretty laid back, John. It's not a big deal.
Okay.
Whenever you can get there. I mean, we have time.
Gotcha. Anyways, the Bill Hancock interview last week, I was really disappointed. I mean, you talked about instant coffee, about making a way through the process. They're going to talk some more. And you kept drilling him about the process and the steps. And he was almost condescending. And he gave you no answers other than they're going to talk some more. And you asked, well, when are you going to talk? Well, I have to, use my Doodle app and whatever. I came away thinking their agenda behind the scene is just to sit on it. I mean, what were your thoughts after the interview?
Listen, I was just trying to be friendly. I like Bill, and I know people get tired of hearing us say stuff like that. So I was trying to be collegial to see if he would give the audience anything. And quite frankly, I think he owes it to the audience, the people that love college football, to say more than he did. I was fairly disappointed. I thought it was a really pathetic interview on his behalf, and I guess my behalf too, since I was participating.
So agree. And by the way, I think you were right about Meyer, excuse Freudian slip. I don't think he'll last the season. I see a resignation due to health crisis coming soon.
No, I'm sure at this point, Urban is probably trying to figure out an exit strategy. There's so much money at stake. That's why I think anybody looking for something immediate is wrong. But When you're four games into a relationship and the owner already says he doesn't trust you, it's over. It's not getting better.
Yeah. We'll see you Friday.
Thank you very much, John. I look forward to it. Dylan is up next. Hello, Dylan.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing today?
We're doing great. Thank you.
I want to talk to you about South Carolina football and how a lot of fans think that the sky is falling in year one of Shane Beamer, you know, especially how we won on a last-second field goal at ECU, and that loss to Kentucky. But as it turns out, obviously the loss against Georgia, it's understandable, but as it turns out, that Kentucky team and that ECU team have both had pretty good games since then, and I was wondering what your opinion was on how you think Shane Beamer is doing. I know you were up there for the Kentucky game.
Yeah, I think everything depends on this weekend, because what's happening this weekend is this. You got two first-year coaches who took over moribund programs, and if you're South Carolina, you can't worry about Georgia right now. You have to worry about those in your lane, and I can't think of any school who is more in South Carolina's lane than Tennessee. So if you're going to inch ahead, you have to stay ahead of South. You have to stay ahead of Tennessee, Missouri. You know you're ahead of Vanderbilt because everybody's ahead of Vanderbilt, and you know then you have Kentucky, Florida, and Georgia in your sight. So I think this is really the biggest game of the year for South Carolina. It's on the road. It's a game I think South Carolina won last year, didn't they beat Tennessee? And it's a game that I think you have to win. Otherwise, you start slipping a little bit. And you know, when you're in a situation like Shane is, you have to get momentum. And I was so impressed 2 weeks ago when we were over there, how enthusiastic people were and how optimistic. But you have to feed that. You can't leave that undernourished. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. We have a long way to go. Ross Dellinger will be joining us shortly. We'll talk about LSU and the college football world right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we welcome all of you back. Big weekend. We mentioned LSU and Kentucky, and Ross Dellinger earlier reporting that Derek Stingley out for this game, and who knows how much longer. Ross, great to have you on. Let's start with Stingley, because there's so many. It's been such a crazy story all year long. What's going on with him?
Yeah, I think he hurt his foot in practice. I believe last week he was in a boot on the sideline of the Auburn game. And had some kind of procedure, and is out indefinitely. And you know, he's a top 10 pick, and LSU right now, is not in a position, at least now, where they're playing for a championship. So, you know, in the past how that's ended. You know, and a top 10 pick is our first round pick in general is hurt mid season of a year that. You know, might not end well. So it'll be interesting to watch and see if he comes back at all.
Well, speaking about not ending well, and I know you were keying us ahead to the real issue and the real story in Baton Rouge. And before I even get to the question, the audience needs to understand you have deep ties to that state. You've covered this team locally, and of course now you cover them as well as college football nationally for SI. So what exactly do you think is going on right now, and how do you see this playing out?
Well, it's weird because probably for 50-plus years, LSU football was known for, at least on the field, for two things. They could run the football, and they played good defense. And last year we saw, you know, an LSU team that was the worst statistically in decades for LSU football. And this year we're seeing a team that is the worst at rushing the football in decades at that school's history. So back-to-back years, you have kind of the two mainstays that you always kind of expect, things you always expect from an LSU football program, not be there. And it's cost them, obviously, last year it cost them multiple wins defensively, allowing massive plays down the field. And while their defense has clearly improved this year, they can't run the football. And it's just kind of shocking to watch. And that really cost them in the game against Auburn. Paul, even though Bo Nix is out there playing Johnny Manziel, his best rendition of Johnny Manziel, LSU had a chance to win if they just could have run the football a little bit in the red zone, and it just couldn't. So it's been stunning to kind of watch.
So knowing the machinations of that athletic department, Ross, how does Coach O survive, and what is his path? Because a lot of people calling here have seen enough.
Yeah, certainly the LSU fan base, as you'd expect, is pretty incensed, I would say. And I think there are people in the administration that are disappointed, obviously, in the way last year went, and of course the start to this season. There needs to be a turnaround. There's got to be some kind of turnaround. And again, as I just alluded to, the rushing offense is so poor that I don't know how you turn it around. But you never know. A lot of football left to be played. But there has to be some kind of turnaround. They can't keep going down this trajectory. And, I kind of thought if they could get the Auburn win, and you could see a path to maybe an 8-4. But it's hard to see that now. It really is when you look at their next few games. It's going to be, Scott Woodward and his staff are going to have a big decision to make. Ed Orgeron has a fairly large buyout. He's just 2 years into a new contract after the national championship game.
So help me understand. I've read the buyout somewhere close to $20 million. Is that right?
I believe it's $16.8 million is from what I understand. And, the staff would be another probably $5, $7, $8 million.
It's a double-edged question. Can LSU afford to pay him off, or can they afford not to? Help us understand the politics of that town.
Well, every time I think that a school, there's no way a school could come up with the money to pay a coach's buyout, lo and behold, they do. I think that most schools, especially within the SEC, have the money to come up with just about anything, in my experience, covering college football in the Southeast. This is the school that just made Kim Mulkey one of the highest paid women's basketball coaches in the nation, matching what she made at Baylor, well over $2 million, I believe, in salary. So this is a school with a lot of money and a lot of resources. And I do not believe any suggestion that would that says that LSU doesn't have the financial backing to for anything. I think that they are in a lot of ways, if they have the motivation, will pay anything. A reminder as well, this is the same school that paid close to $15-18 million a few years ago to buy out Les Miles and part of his staff.
Ross, finally, we now know because of documents of how difficult it was for Joe Oliva, the former athletic director, to do what he wanted to do. Explain, if you could, the difference between where Oliva was then concerning Les Miles and where Scott Woodward, who's a native son, who has much deeper political ties and friendships in that community and in that state, where he is right now sitting as the athletic director.
Yeah, vastly vastly different places, right? Joe Oliva was a person who was not from the area, never felt like quite a fit in basically from the very start, angered much of the fan base and I think alumni in boosters, and I just, like you mentioned, Scott is a native Louisianian, LSU guy, worked with Mark Emmert when he was president of LSU, has a lot of deep political connections in the state. And if there's any state whose state school is connected to that state's politics and political arena, it is LSU in Louisiana. I've written about it a bit. It's incredible how closely tied those things are. So I think Scott certainly has more authority than Joe probably ever did. But something to keep in mind in Louisiana, and how LSU works is it is politically backed a lot, and its board of supervisors, as it calls it, is handpicked by the governor. And I don't know how many there are, maybe 18 to 20 board of supervisors, and they make a lot of critical decisions. And that's, what happened with Joe Oliva is that, the board, and I think F. King Alexander, the former president, has said this publicly before, is how powerful the board is there. But I think there's a lot of trust in Scott Woodward, again, mostly because he is kind of one of them, so to speak.
And finally, I'm just, a lot of what I'm asking you, I've regurgitated from having read you and read about that, but I definitely remember reading that the governor and Coach O are friends, and Coach O is friends with everybody down there. I mean, they all loved him. Now, that doesn't matter if you lose. So how difficult do you think this decision is going to be if this team can't turn it around?
Well, Paul, there was a segment of the fan base that wanted Ed Orgeron to be coached because what he had did in the interim in 2016 after taking over for Les Miles and the fact that he was from Louisiana, right? The fact that he kind of talked like they did and ate the things they do and just culturally, it's hard to describe. And I know I've talked about this on your show before, how different South Louisiana is from any other place I have ever been in America. It might as well be a different country, just from the culture to the people and the food and just the atmosphere in general. It is different, and I think there was a large segment of the fan base that was excited to have as football coach someone from there. But I think there was also a large segment of the fan base that thought LSU should have gone out and gotten an outsider with a proven track record. And that part of the fan base obviously has grown large, with all the losing that has happened the last year or so. And I think that they're very loud now. And there are a lot of probably powerful players in that grouping, in that group. But Ed Orgeron's got high place friends, as you mentioned, right? The governor and him are close, and they are. They've gone on fishing trips and hunting trips, I believe, before, and cooked together and all that. So there, he definitely has high place friends as well. It's going to be interesting to watch this go down, because if it's an easy decision, which it probably would be if LSU doesn't, win enough games, or maybe if they turn it around a little bit here, it will be more of a difficult decision and could fracture some members of that state.
Division in Louisiana. That would be a first, wouldn't it, Ross? great to have you with us. So knowledgeable and so deeply seated in that complex but wonderful state. Ross Dellinger joining us from Sports Illustrated. We are heading to a break. More of your phone calls right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Great to have all of you with us here as we continue in the first hour. Let's check out Larry up next in South Carolina. Hello, Larry. Good afternoon to you.
Hello, Paul. Love your show. Watch
Thank you.
It every day.
Thanks so much.
The last time I talked to you was back in early April. You might recall you gave me the okay to watch the Masters and not watch you that week.
yes, I do remember. That was a good decision, by the way.
Which you gave me permission to do, and I thank you. But I'm not calling you about golf this week. I'm calling about the University of Georgia-Auburn football game coming up. I've been a Georgia fan for so many years. It's unbelievable. But I want to know if you, maybe your fans might be interested. When do you think was the last time or in the last decade that Georgia and Auburn played before a crowd of less than 20,000 people?
I'm assuming it's a very long time ago.
Yeah, and I was there at one of those years.
So I'm assuming, there was a reason why the crowd was low.
All right. I doubt if anybody except old Georgia fans, and I've been a Georgia fan since 1939, since my brother went to the University of Georgia. And I went to an Auburn, Georgia football game. My dad took me to it in 1941. They played in Columbus, Georgia,
right,
in the stadium where I think most of the high school teams played.
Right.
And I know there were less than 20,000 fans. And I just loved it. I had been earlier. Georgia had a good team in 41. They went to the Orange Bowl. But they played in my hometown of Macon, Georgia, and they beat Mercer 81-0 to start the season. So my dad took me over to Columbus for the Georgia-Auburn game. And I don't know if the stadium may have been a city stadium or a high school stadium. I know my high school team played a football game over in that stadium once. But there were less than 20,000 fans, and Frank Sinkwich was the star of the Georgia team. And because my brother was there, I just became an avid Georgia fan, and I've been a Georgia fan ever since. And that game was 7-0. And I can't see it, but I remember it so well. Georgia won the game. Sinkwich threw a pass to their right halfback. That was the single wing. They said it threw a, it was called Lamar Racehorse David. And it went for 60 or 70 yards, and Georgia won 7-0. And I've never forgotten. It was one of the most exciting games I ever went to, and I went to a lot of Georgia games over my life's viewing of Georgia football, and I still don't miss a game. I'm looking forward to this Saturday.
Larry, thank you. We're unfortunately at the end of the hour. Fantastic story. We will be right back.